Have you ever wondered why some products succeed wildly while others fail miserably despite similar features? In 2012, Laura Klein's UX for Lean Startups revolutionized how companies approach product development by merging user experience design with lean startup methodology. This book became the secret weapon for countless successful startups, with founders like Airbnb's Brian Chesky and Dropbox's Drew Houston citing its principles as crucial to their growth. What makes Klein's approach so powerful is its ruthless focus on building only what users truly need, validated through real-world testing rather than assumptions. While traditional UX books advocated perfection before launch, Klein's practical methods showed how to create excellent user experiences with minimal resources. A decade later, its principles have become standard practice at companies from nimble startups to tech giants like Google and Facebook, fundamentally changing how products get built in the digital age. Lean UX represents a fundamental shift in how we approach product design. Unlike traditional UX focused on fulfilling a designer's vision, Lean UX treats products as sets of hypotheses to be validated through customer research and testing. This seemingly simple change transforms statements like, "We need to add comments to product pages," into testable hypotheses such as, "We believe allowing comments will increase customer engagement and purchases." What truly distinguishes Lean UX is its integration of established design approaches with validation methods. While it incorporates user-centered design's focus on the user, Lean UX adds crucial elements not found in traditional approaches: frequent iterations, hypothesis validation, agile teamwork, and scientific measurement of design outcomes. It's not about replacing established methods, but enhancing them with methodologies for faster, more measurable product development. The approach is inherently agile, rejecting the waterfall method where research and design might take months before reaching engineering. Like agile development, Lean UX focuses on short, rapid cycles to get faster feedback. However, it differs by replacing traditional user stories with user hypotheses that must be validated through real-world use. In Lean UX, a feature isn't done when shipped. It's only ready for its next iteration after measuring its impact on key metrics, a fundamental shift that transforms product design. Contrary to common misconceptions, Lean UX isn't about being as cheap as possible. It's about eliminating waste. Traditional UX processes often involve extensive research, design, and testing before writing any code, costing tens of thousands of dollars before validating the product idea. Lean UX saves money by preventing investment in unwanted products through lightweight experimentation and iteration. The cautionary tale of Webvan illustrates this principle. They spent $400 million building infrastructure before confirming people wanted to shop for groceries online. A lean approach would have started with minimal experiments and partnerships with existing stores, potentially saving enough money to survive until the market was ready. At its core, Lean UX revolves around continuous iteration, starting with a minimum viable product, MVP, the smallest thing that can validate or invalidate a hypothesis, is just the beginning. The critical step many miss is what comes after validation: action. Lean UX generates actionable metrics that must drive next steps, creating a cycle of building small things, learning from them, and continuing to build or pivot based on those learnings. It's not about replacing established methods, but enhancing them with methodologies for faster, more measurable product development. Most startups begin with a product idea, and most startups fail. These facts are deeply connected. Companies typically build products based on what sounds interesting rather than what solves real problems for real people. To avoid this fate, think of products as solutions to problems. Word processors solved editing difficulties, GPS solved navigation challenges, and even Angry Birds solved boredom during wait times. Understanding the distinction between markets, problems, and products is crucial for validation. A market is your target customer group: tax professionals, real estate agents, teachers. A problem is what drives these people to use your product. Without solving a genuine problem, nobody will pay you. The product is your specific solution. Many startups fail because they create products searching for markets rather than identifying real problems first. Instead of brainstorming brilliant product ideas, focus on discovering existing problems within your target market that you can solve. Sometimes the best problems are those users don't recognize until you fix them. Before email, people managed with phones and faxes despite their limitations. By observing potential users, you can identify inefficiencies and pain points that could be improved. You've successfully validated a problem when you consistently hear specific complaints from particular groups of people. A validated problem doesn't guarantee people will pay for the solution. You must also validate your market. Startups often target overly broad groups like women or doctors when they should focus on narrower segments like urban working moms without nannies or oncologists in large practices who don't handle billing. Starting with smaller, more specific markets helps you find groups with similar problems that your initial product can solve effectively. Even with a real problem and willing customers, your specific solution might not be the right one. Millions want to lose weight, but not every diet plan succeeds. Product validation is an iterative process that continually asks, does this product truly solve the identified problem for the specified market? You've validated your product when a significant percentage of your target market offers to pay for your solution. Several user research methods can provide feedback about your problem, market, and product before writing a single line of code. The most effective validation method is directly observing potential users. This reveals not just what they say about their problems, but how they actually behave. For example, research on payroll processors revealed their work was surprisingly non-linear and interrupt-driven, crucial information that wouldn't emerge from simple interviews. Beyond observing behaviors, you learn why people do things certain ways, providing invaluable context for your solution. Landing page tests help validate both your market and product by advertising your solution before building it. This approach lets you gauge interest and willingness to pay without investing in development. By measuring how many people click buy or pre-order buttons, you get concrete data about market interest. After validating that people have a problem and might pay for a solution, you need to ensure your specific approach works through prototype testing. Many startups approach user research without knowing which methods are appropriate for their situation. While it's encouraging that they want research, choosing the wrong method wastes time and money. And for those who claim they don't have time for research, you'd better make time to fix your product after building it wrong, because that's inevitable without research. Even if you think you're a unique snowflake with no competitors, you need to identify and test similar products used by your target audience. Testing competitors' products reveals their mistakes that you can avoid and helps identify opportunities to create simpler, more elegant solutions. This research is particularly valuable for enterprise software, where isolating the 10% of features people actually use can help you build a streamlined product that outperforms bloated alternatives. Many users have no idea what your product does, even after seeing it. Your messaging, how you explain your product's benefits and features, is critical and must be tested from the beginning. 5-second tests help you understand if visitors quickly grasp what your product does, who it's for, and how to get it, testing your messaging, branding, and call to action. Most frustrating user experiences can be avoided by testing interactive prototypes before writing code. While more labor-intensive than other methods, prototype testing is essential for complex interactions that might confuse users. A clickable prototype can range from linked wireframes to a fully functional UI without back-end processing. This approach is particularly valuable when building complicated flows like marketplace selling interfaces, where users need to provide various information types and could get confused at multiple points. Guerrilla user testing offers a faster, cheaper, and more actionable alternative to traditional lab testing. Instead of expensive facilities and lengthy reports that nobody reads, guerrilla testing quickly identifies major usability flaws, particularly for new users encountering your product. Take your prototype or product to a coffee shop and offer to buy someone coffee for 10 minutes of their time. Give them a single task without explanation or help, then observe where they get stuck. Getting useful feedback requires specific techniques that even experienced people often get wrong. The most important rule when interviewing users is to stop talking and start listening. You want their opinions, not yours. Avoid the common mistake of explaining everything about your product up front. Don't describe what it does, who it's for, or highlight all its features. Instead, provide minimal context and let users explore independently. Never ask yes-no questions like, "Do you think this is cool?" or "Was that easy to use?" Instead, ask broad questions that start discussions. "What do you think of this?" or "How'd that go?" Open-ended questions prevent leading the user and generate more interesting insights. When users respond with vague descriptors like cool, intuitive, or confusing, always follow up to understand what specifically about the product elicited that reaction. Resist the urge to help users at the first sign of struggle. You're testing if they can figure out your product independently, not if they can follow instructions. User failures often provide the most valuable insights, revealing natural mental models and showing where your design needs to change. While doing the right research at the right time saves considerable effort, you can make your research even more efficient. Rather than running extensive tests with many participants, conduct small batches of research with just enough people to identify patterns, typically 5 to 6 participants. After each small batch, analyze findings, make changes to address obvious problems, then test again. This approach is far more efficient than large studies where the same major issues appear repeatedly, blocking discovery of smaller problems. While getting out of the building is valuable advice, remote research can often be more efficient. Many types of testing can be conducted via screen sharing tools, saving time and money while allowing access to global users. The only research that absolutely requires in-person sessions is when you need to understand the physical environment where users interact with your product or when testing requires hands-on product access. Unmoderated testing services provide videos of real people using your product without requiring you to recruit or moderate sessions. These tools excel at quickly revealing whether new users can perform specific tasks on your product, but they're not suitable for determining if people will like or use your product in real life. When used appropriately, these services can identify usability issues within hours rather than days, allowing for rapid iteration. Surveys are not a substitute for genuine user engagement. They inherently limit responses to predetermined options, creating significant bias, even with other fields. However, surveys excel at validating patterns discovered through qualitative research. For example, after interviewing female angel investors and spotting patterns, a survey helped validate these hypotheses across a larger group. The key is to use surveys to confirm existing hypotheses rather than generate new ones. Despite good intentions, companies frequently release products without adequate customer feedback. Common excuses include following design standards blindly, copying features from successful companies without testing, claiming lack of time or money, planning to fix problems later, protecting a personal vision, or creating prototypes just to secure funding. All of these excuses ultimately harm the product and business. Qualitative research has its limits, despite its importance. While it helps understand why problems occur, it isn't suitable for every situation. The key is knowing when to use qualitative methods versus quantitative ones. Quantitative tells you what the problem is, while qualitative reveals why it exists. For simple changes like repositioning a buy button without altering anything else, skip qualitative testing and go straight to measuring user behavior. With only one variable changing, you can easily determine why behavior changed. Only revisit with qualitative methods if you see surprising metric shifts that need explanation. When adding complex features like user connections that involve multiple interface changes, qualitative testing becomes essential before shipping. Without it, you won't know why a feature succeeded or failed. Usability testing with interactive prototypes helps identify confusing elements so you can fix them before launch, giving your feature the best chance of success. When prioritizing from numerous feature ideas, use both qualitative and quantitative research to understand what users are and aren't doing with your product. This isn't about asking users exactly what they want, but learning from their behavior to make informed decisions. Watch users interact with your product to spot struggles and disappointments. Talk to people who've abandoned your product to understand their expectations. Observe new customers during their first 15 minutes to ensure the experience matches their expectations. While qualitative testing provides valuable user insights, it can't answer every question effectively, particularly whether users will buy a product with a specific feature. People are notoriously bad at predicting their future behavior. Purchase decisions depend on numerous factors beyond features, many outside the company's control, like economic conditions or personal circumstances. Qualitative research excels at revealing whether users can complete tasks, if features make sense, and whether they enjoy or hate the experience. It's better at predicting negative outcomes, users won't use a feature, than positive ones. Quantitative testing is more effective for predicting purchasing behavior. The most effective way to determine if users will do something is setting up tests to observe what they actually do, which requires quantitative approaches. Design is about solving problems, and Lean UX encourages doing just enough design to validate your hypothesis. This approach can be more challenging than traditional design because it requires identifying what's most important right now versus what's wasteful. Whether fixing bugs, creating new features, or building entirely new products, the goal remains consistent: design just enough to validate your hypothesis and no more. Before designing solutions, you must deeply understand the problem from your user's perspective. Rather than saying, "I want to add comments," reframe it as, "My users lack ways to communicate with each other, affecting engagement." This understanding requires research with both users and stakeholders. Consider your user base, who's using your product, their tech familiarity, usage context, on the go or at desk, time sensitivity, and user needs, work, fun, productivity. This step can never be skipped. Without understanding the problem, you cannot solve it. What truly distinguishes Lean UX is establishing measurable goals and determining how to measure success before designing. For example, at IMVU, when the team wanted to increase user activation rates, they first defined what success would look like, a statistically significant increase in new users returning to the product. They created an A/B test to verify whether design changes were successful, understanding that sometimes the smallest changes have the biggest impact. Unlike agile engineering stories, design stories break down problems into manageable steps and provide evaluation criteria. Good stories focus on outcomes rather than implementations. For example, users who are having trouble making changes to their accounts can quickly figure out how to solve that problem. Don't forget administrative stories like customer service reps can quickly add new content when new problems arise. Avoid being too specific about solutions to prevent locking into ideas prematurely. Brainstorming with a small, targeted group who understand the problem is essential but should be brief. For common problems like onboarding confusion, solutions might include tutorials, videos, walkthroughs, tooltips, or contextual help. The key is to gather diverse ideas without shooting them down prematurely. Start by clearly stating the problem and success metrics, have everyone write down ideas, then share and group them by impact or implementation difficulty, all in under 15 minutes. Making decisions is the hardest yet most crucial design skill. Use ROI calculations to guide your choice. Map expected return against expected cost for each potential solution. Include engineering, marketing, customer service, and sales stakeholders to provide accurate information about costs and benefits. The process may be iterative as teams refine their estimates, but getting everyone thinking early helps catch and fix problems faster. Before investing heavily in design and implementation, try to invalidate your idea to avoid wasting resources. For example, if you hypothesize that e-commerce customers want to resell their gadgets, test with a simple "sell your gadget" button that tracks clicks before building the entire feature. Every failed feature you don't build saves time and money for more promising ideas. Sketching should be quick and disposable, allowing you to try multiple versions of your idea. Use tools like Balsamiq or OmniGraffle that produce high enough fidelity to communicate your concept. Focus on what elements belong on a screen, how they relate, and work through different states and user interactions. After creating several versions, test them with users to determine which ones best solve your observed problems. Interactive prototypes aren't just clickable presentations, they're fully functional experiences where users can explore, complete tasks, make mistakes, and recover. While they take longer to build than sketches, they're faster than building the actual product and help identify usability issues before writing code. They're especially valuable for complex interactions with multiple steps, features that take significant time to build or fix, products that can't be easily changed after release, and designs where interactivity is crucial. No matter how good a designer you are, your first design will never be perfect. Lean methodology emphasizes iteration, building quickly, testing with users, and improving based on feedback. Get your designs in front of users as fast as possible to discover what works, what confuses them, and what they hate. Then fix problems and continue iterating until you have something users are excited about. This chapter focuses on knowing when not to design, a skill just as important as knowing how to design. Lean UX is about doing just enough design to learn what you need, not creating crappy designs. The goal is to strip away unnecessary work so you can focus on making things easy, obvious, and useful rather than just beautiful or cool. Designers naturally want to design everything, but this can lead to overdesign, focusing on details and vision that don't directly solve problems. The key is to strip out everything that isn't necessary to validate your hypothesis or move key metrics. When validating whether you can sell something, you only need reasons people might want to buy, a way for people to indicate purchase interest, and enough people to test how many actually want to buy. Features like comments, ratings, and recommendations might be nice, but they aren't necessary for initial validation. A feature stub offers a way to validate feature ideas without building the complete functionality. Instead of investing in complex payment systems or features, simply create a button that says upgrade and a static page with pricing and benefits. Track clicks to measure interest before committing resources to full development. This approach lets you test assumptions quickly and cheaply, focusing on validating hypotheses rather than building elaborate solutions that might not work. The Wizard of Oz approach involves manually providing a service before building the technology to automate it. Food on the Table, which helps people plan meals around grocery store sales, initially skipped building their complex system and instead manually collected sales circulars and sat with customers to plan meals. This allowed them to validate customer interest before investing in design and development. Only after confirming people loved the concept did they build the actual product. When Food on the Table discovered users were repeatedly clicking an add meal button because of slow response times, they chose the simplest effective solution, adding a spinner to show the button was working. Rather than tackling the more complex engineering challenge of reducing server latency, they addressed the core user problem, uncertainty about whether their action registered. This approach worked because users only needed to add a few meals at a time, making a brief wait acceptable. The key is identifying the smallest change that effectively solves the actual problem without over-engineering. Startups with limited resources must ruthlessly prioritize features that drive key metrics rather than polishing less important elements. It's like focusing on building brakes for your car instead of perfect cup holders. To prioritize effectively, ask, what problem is this solving? And how important is this problem compared to others? Many startups waste precious resources on features that don't significantly improve acquisition, retention, or revenue. Measuring design results can be incredibly valuable both to you as a designer and to your company, though it's a topic that angers many designers. A/B testing, also called bucket or multivariate testing, involves creating multiple versions of a screen or feature and showing each to different user groups to determine which produces better metrics. This allows you to make data-driven decisions about what truly impacts your business. Like a scientific experiment, you need a control group to understand the impact of your changes. The goal isn't to replace design thinking, but to validate whether your design decisions are actually helping your bottom line. Many designers resist A/B testing due to fundamental misunderstandings about how it works. A/B testing is simply a tool, and like any tool, it can be used poorly. People often blame the method when it's actually being misapplied to problems it wasn't meant to solve. Some fear A/B testing means randomly testing whatever ideas pop up, with engineers algorithmically generating features and measuring which performs best. This is nonsense. A/B testing only specifies that you test designs against each other or a control. It says nothing about how you generate those designs. You still need good research and design processes to create the experiences worth testing. Many people associate A/B testing with Google's famous blue link test and assume it's only for minor tweaks. But A/B testing has nothing to do with the size of the change being tested. You can test entirely new features or massive product-wide redesigns just as easily as button colors. The methodology simply involves showing different versions to different user groups and measuring the results. The scope of what you're testing is entirely up to you. Some argue that A/B testing only helps you climb to the top of your current hill rather than finding taller hills, optimizing what exists rather than discovering breakthrough opportunities. This argument is particularly frustrating because A/B testing doesn't even inherently improve what you have. It simply measures differences between options. A/B testing is agnostic about what you test. You can test radical new approaches against current designs to see if they represent those taller hills. Critics point to Amazon's cluttered product pages as evidence that A/B testing creates messy interfaces. While these pages may not be visually harmonious, they're highly profitable. The issue isn't with A/B testing itself, but with how you structure your tests. When testing multiple elements individually and implementing everything that shows a small conversion improvement, you can end up with an overwhelming page. A better approach is sequential testing. Start with the bare minimum elements needed, then add one feature at a time, keeping only what significantly improves conversion. Understanding when to use qualitative research versus A/B testing is critical. While both help you make better product decisions based on feedback, they answer entirely different questions. Used together, they create the most powerful system for informing design decisions. A/B testing excels at providing statistically significant data on how changes affect key metrics like revenue and retention. It helps you understand user behavior, make feature decisions, validate design choices, identify small changes with outsized effects, and gather user feedback without direct interaction. Qualitative testing helps eliminate obviously confusing designs, confirm obviously good elements, and narrow down what needs A/B testing to a manageable size. For example, when testing multiple checkout flows, qualitative testing can eliminate the ones clearly not working, leaving fewer options to A/B test. This saves significant time and resources. While A/B testing can help eliminate ineffective designs, it can't generate new ideas, but users can. When users consistently get stuck in the same place during interviews, you've identified a problem to solve. These insights create hypotheses that can be validated through A/B testing. With limited resources, especially in startups, we constantly make trade-offs. Building one feature means sacrificing other opportunities. The techniques in this chapter won't make decisions easy or guaranteed to be right, but they will make them faster. The faster you can validate or invalidate hypotheses, the more you can try before running out of money, potentially the difference between finding product market fit and finding a new job. One hallmark of lean UX is avoiding the waterfall approach, where product managers write full specs, then hand off to design, which completes its work before engineering starts. This traditional method is slow and poor at producing innovative products. The best alternative is the cross-functional team, combining people from different disciplines to work together on a specific product area. Instead of separate departments, imagine a team focused on the first-time user experience, including engineers, a product owner, and a designer, with possible involvement from customer service, QA, or sales. Everyone participates from the beginning. Engineers attend user research sessions, product owners and designers conduct research together, and designers work closely with engineers during implementation. With a lean cross-functional team, the process looks entirely different. Instead of working in isolation, the product owner identifies a metric to improve and conducts research with the designer and engineers to understand problems. The team collaboratively identifies projects with good ROI and determines the minimum viable feature set needed to test their hypothesis. Engineers can begin building foundation elements while designers create sketches and prototypes. Engineers participate in prototype testing to better understand how features should behave. Most importantly, the entire team monitors user behavior after launch and can quickly respond to feedback. This approach eliminates information losing handoffs, identifies problems earlier, builds trust between disciplines, and creates flexibility to pivot when needed. For very small startups, particularly those with fewer than 7 or 8 engineers, separating product management and design roles often creates unnecessary overhead. By combining these responsibilities into one person who gathers user information, translates it into well-designed features, and ensures proper implementation, small teams can reduce overhead, save money, and move faster. Since engineers are expensive and busy, lean UX practitioners should validate hypotheses before writing code whenever possible. For example, one children's clothing company wanted to test a pre-order feature before building it into their site. Instead of full implementation, they simply promoted a single jacket as a pre-order item on their blog with a PayPal button, requiring just 5 minutes of engineering time. By comparing conversion rates to regular products, they validated the concept without extensive development. This approach allowed for easy iteration on variables like discount amounts and advanced ordering timeframes while engineering built the permanent solution. Many startups fear shipping imperfect products will alienate their hard-won customers. While understandable, early adopters are typically more forgiving of missteps. For those still nervous, there are several approaches to reduce risk while still getting valuable feedback. The lowest risk approach is using interactive prototypes to get changes in front of real users without affecting your existing product. Allowing users to opt into new features creates a self-selected group of people who are not only accepting of change, but actively seeking it. After confirming your feature doesn't completely suck, expand testing to include people who resist change by giving users the ability to revert to the old version and measuring how many actually do. The entire book distills down to 3 essential principles: constantly listen to your users, validate assumptions and hypotheses before building products around them, and iterate continuously on your designs. That's it. Follow these principles and you'll ship something amazing.